Well, good afternoon, everybody. As you know, our show is on now at 5:30 in the afternoon, 5:30 to 6 on this fine station, WAIT, every Saturday afternoon, and I hope you remember to tell your friends about the new time and about our guests. The White Sox will be playing Minnesota today, and the Cubs are on the road at Pittsburgh, where last night they had a rough time. They started Holtzman over there, and Jerry really had a rough time. But left-handers in Pittsburgh, it's almost suicide with all those great right-hand hitters they have. The White Sox behind Kravick, who normally pitches a, well, he's one of the most impressive-looking young pitchers I've seen, had a rough time, and they lost last night, too. But let's hope that things are going to be different today. Our guest today is going to be a friend of mine of many, many years, one of the great center fielders, one of the best center fielders I ever watched. That's Jimmy Pearsall, one of the voices now of the White Sox. He was a great ball player, and he's doing very, very well on radio and TV. So we'll talk about baseball and the highlights of his career, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. Jimmy Pearsall, over his career, his baseball playing career and his radio career, he and I have been very, very close friends. I saw some of the great catches that he made in the American League and playing in center field. I suffered through a period with him when I just said to him a few minutes ago, I think that most of the things that you did that got a lot of publicity was because that you are a capricious sort of individual, and I think that even shows up in his broadcasting. So I think you were enjoying yourself.
Well, it took me 10 minutes to look that word up. I don't know, you and Harry, with all these big words, you great announcers throughout the years, you know, you got to come down to my level. Were you saying that I used my sickness to have some fun and to do things? I say yes. The best thing that ever happened to me was going nuts. You know, one thing about it, if I made a mistake on the field or if I got arguing with umpires or I got saying things, they say, well, he's a little goofy, but he'll be all right. No matter what it was, I found that I loved to play. I certainly hated the opposition. I really hated umpires. They've changed the color of their uniforms. I might have liked them better now. But to me, I just enjoyed the game, and I think that the most important part of playing the game is you've got to enjoy it first to be a good player.
Jimmy, out of that period came a very fine book called Fear Strikes Out and then a motion picture.
Well, the book I was very happy about. I thought that it sort of helped a lot of people from my mail and from people on the street saying to me, Jim, thanks a lot for explaining to my mother, to my father, that when you have a sickness, there's nothing to be ashamed of because it's just like any other illness, a cold or a broken leg. It's something that you get over, and you certainly don't have to be ashamed of it. And I think employers of many people have had this problem because of fellows like myself who have shown that you can come back and do a job for somebody, will give somebody another chance. That's the big thing in life. The stigma attached to mental illness is something that many people can't face. They're afraid of going back to the public and what they're going to say. But I think that a lot of things have been done to help them to realize that all they have to do is to go do their job. And that's all anybody asks is give me a chance to do my job.
Well, wouldn't you call the problem that you had a type of a temporary nervous breakdown?
I call it I was physically and mentally tired. In other words, I had put in so much pressure on myself. I wasn't being successful at the time. They had changed me around. Boudreaux had put me at short. I'd been an all-star center fielder in the minor leagues for 4 years. Now, all of a sudden, they're going to stick me in another position. You know, if you listen to me talk on the air, I'll explain to you that it is not that easy to go from one position to the other and say, okay, you play third today or you play left field tomorrow and you've never been there. Major League Baseball and the fans deserve a player who is accomplished and earned his right to be there, not just to stick a player out there and say, okay, do the job because you can hit. You've got to be sort of a complete ball player to be in the big leagues. At least that's the way I feel. We've got a lot of one-way ball players in baseball today making a lot of money. And I think the fans are getting cheated out of good, complete playing by a player.
Well, when we talk, and I covered the period when all these fellows played, about great center fielders, I would refer to DiMaggio, I would refer to Mays, and I would refer to Pearsall. Have I missed any great one?
Well, I think Blair. Of course, he was in. He hadn't been playing that long when you were announcing, but I consider him one of the finest center fielders that I ever saw. Another guy named Chuck Deering, that was not much of a hitter. He played for the Cardinals for a while, and watching him play center field, he got as good a jump on the ball, and that's the most important part of playing center field, is the good jump. It isn't how fast you can run, it's how quick you get off the bat. I've seen a lot of guys that can run like Rivers, and Rivers is a terrible outfielder for what speed he has. He has to outrun every ball. He doesn't go right to the ball right away at the crack of the bat. He starts leaving about the time the ball gets to the pitcher's mound. But he does make up for it with his speed. Mantle was not a good center fielder for getting a jump on the ball. He too outran the ball. So there's a difference in being a quick outfielder and getting the ball jump, because, you know, the first two steps is, I think, the most important part of playing center field.
What about Jolton Joe DiMaggio?
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, I used to watch DiMaggio and Williams. I used to sell papers in Waterbury, Connecticut, and if you sold more papers than anybody else, you got a chance to go down on Sunday to see a doubleheader. And I saw DiMaggio, who could go get the ball. And he, too, he would get to the ball so quick that he made catches look very, very easy. And he knew how to – he never dove for a ball. You see these guys diving for balls. You never see good – like Tress Speaker, who was a very dear friend of mine, who taught me an awful lot about thinking how to play center field. You know, you can have the ability, but if you can't think how to play out there and take command of your position, can't play. DiMaggio, there's no one that has been any better than him. Mays made a lot of errors. Willie had a tendency to overrun ground balls. But to catch the ball and throw it, there wasn't any better. And he was my overall best player of my time. Because he could do it all.
Yeah, he sure could.
Oh, yeah, he could. You know, he was the type of guy that when he got on base, he bothered the pitcher. He could go from first to third looking back over his shoulder, and whoever tries to do that now falls down. He also played every day. He had over 600 home runs, something like 643 home runs, and in a ballpark or a Candlestick after playing in the Polo Grounds where the wind blew in all the time, boy, you got to give him a lot of credit because he was a right-handed hitter. Just a great player, and... I would pay to watch him play anytime.
Jimmy Pearsall, the adjustment to baseball and to playing center field and getting the reputation you had, which was the toughest, that or the field that you're in now, the broadcasting field?
Well, the toughest part of my life was getting out of my hometown. You know, I lived in a town where it was all factories, and we had, my dad made $30 a week. He was a house painter, and... my thought about this, we were in a $19 a month cold water flat. I thought that was the toughest part of my life, was to get out of there. Boy, I'm going to get out of here. I don't like this. I'm unloading freight cars in a silver factory in Meriden, Connecticut, driving a plow at night. These were things that made me drive and made me realize when I got the opportunity to play baseball, this is great. There's nothing hard about this after getting out of my hometown. My mother, when I left to go to play minor league baseball, had made my clothes. You know, Ma used to make the pillowcases. She used to make the sheets out of flour bags. I know a lot of people who cares, but older people that I'm talking right now know what I'm talking about. She made the bedspreads. They were so heavy when you went to sleep, you woke up tired. You know, but you had to keep warm. It was either keep warm or get tired. You know, but I love Mom to pieces. They had me when they were 43 years old, and they weren't really worrying too much about whether I was going to play sports or not. They liked it. They were more worrying about us surviving and eating. We didn't have this welfare stuff where you got things for nothing. You know, this is the worst thing that's happened to this country. We're overeducated and we're over-welfared. It's really a shame that people have lost their pride in taking money for nothing. I couldn't do that in a million years. I just don't think I would wash dishes and build my way up before I let somebody have to go beg into some guy sitting behind a desk for money. I don't like to get into politics. I don't like politicians. I don't like lawyers. I don't like judges. I don't like school professors. There's a lot of things I don't like, but that's my privilege. This is America. You know, most people won't speak up in this country. We're going through a period right now where the economy has gone sky high, and the president is over in some other country worrying about feeding them $5 billion. I mean, this is the way I feel. And why shouldn't I voice my opinion about it? I've lost 8 jobs because I do that. But so what? I got my pension now. I get $950 a month from playing baseball for 20 years. Makes it nice. Makes you a little independent. And that's why when I get on the air, I say what I think. Doesn't make it right. But I love it. I just love the fact that I don't have to kiss anybody.
Well, people have said that they admire your broadcasting, and they... do think that you are rather negative. I say, well, everybody's got a different style. That's his style.
Yeah, but what about all the good things I say? Nobody ever says when I tell about a player making a good play or a player's thinking out there or doing the job. The only thing that the wives hear, the wives of the players, is if I criticize their husband, no matter if I just said he's walking to the plate too slow, that makes them. And when they tell the husband about it, they don't even tell it right. So, and I don't really care. I really don't care what the players' wives think. Because I'm telling the fans listening in my opinion of what's going on in that field, and I know a hell of a lot more about it than a player's wife. Because when they play on the field, I see a lot of things that other players or other people don't see because I've got a position, and you know when we sit upstairs, you see the ball game better. You see things happen. So when I tell it, they know that I'm telling them the truth. I am not covering up anything, and Harry doesn't either. But also, we will tell you about great plays. Last night was one of the finest games I've seen in 2 years. We didn't win the ball game, but there were great plays by the third baseman. Castino at third, he made some great plays. A great play by Torres of a ball against the fence in right field that was one of the finest I've ever seen, where a guy crashes in the wall, bounces around, hits the other wall, and makes a good catch. Then we go into the ninth with runners on first and third. If a home run here, we tie the ball game. Ortiz pinch hitting, and a shot to right center that is Edwards goes back. And, you know, when you go back over your shoulder and you're able to jump a little bit and catch the ball going away, boy, that's a catch, and he saved the ball game. So these are the things that people don't say, well, boy, they get all excited about those good plays. That's good baseball. But we see a lot of bad baseball because players don't belong out on that field. They're filling in positions because they can hit or they can just field. It's amazing. But I'll say this for Mr. Vec. He never tells us what to say or what not to say. And he's one of the few people I think I could possibly work for in baseball today because all baseball announcers are homers.
Jimmy, do you feel that expansion has hurt baseball?
Yes, this last one. We had caught up, and the baseball was pretty even. Now you've got a lot of garbage. You know, you got on your if you look on your roster, after maybe 10 or 12 guys, it's full of garbage. Guys that couldn't play good AAA, but they're here to fill the roster. We're only carrying 24 guys right now because we can't find another guy who is ready to play up here that will do us justice. What's the sense of bringing up a guy just to put him here and he ain't going to do any good for us? So there's a lot of players that you're watching out there right now that just aren't major league ball players.
What about one of the most controversial figures in baseball, and you probably have met him many times and maybe interviewed him a number of times, is Jackson of the Yankees.
Well, Jackson has done an awful lot with very little. He has a fielding lifetime average of .267. A right fielder making 15 errors in 1 year is unbelievable. He's got a lifetime batting average of .267, but he got $3 million. He's a good politician. He's an excellent speaker. He's very clever, and he draws people. So, but as far as my rating him in the Hall of Fame, if they put him in the Hall of Fame, there's a lot of guys want out because he don't belong in there. No, but I'm just being serious. I watched Jackson get picked off a third base when I was working for Oakland 9 times. He's a very bad base runner. As an outfielder, he is just adequate. You know, adequate. He's not he doesn't get a jump on the ball. It's always he can't see. His glasses are bad or something. Or, you know, Martin's going to go crazy again. They got him playing. Steinbrenner's got him playing every day. Look at their 10 games out, and him playing right field has not helped him.
You know, you were talking about Blair. Blair covered a lot of ground when he was out there and had Jackson to his left.
Well, and don't get me wrong, Jackson probably works hard at fielding, but he doesn't have that ability. But Blair, you're talking about another great outfielder. Blair belongs in the top 10 outfielders of my time, without any question. And I'll never forget, though, one time I'm sitting in Texas, and I got some customers, and I was working for Texas City. Next to me, I said, watch that Blair. He gets a good jump on the ball. He's really exciting. The first ball was a line drive, hit him to his left a little bit, and he dropped it. And, you know, that happens to any ball player. But when you just get through saying, oh, what a great player, I'm trying to make this guy think I know what I'm talking about. But this happens, and I've seen ball players do it, but Blair's have to go down as one of the best.
Well, your opinion is shared by practically every ball player I ever talked to. They think he's really one of the greats.
Let me tell you something about two outfielders that played for Chicago. Barry and Landis, you know, take a back seat to no one. Barry was a good outfielder, and, boy, he could go back on a ball as good as anybody I ever saw. I don't think he played long enough and certainly wasn't on a ball club where he could be noticed. You know, when you're in Boston or you're in New York, Chicago sure is a big city, but for some reason you don't get the covers that you got when I played in Boston and New York. It just seems like the rivalry between Boston and New York. If Stengel says he's a good outfielder, boy, it went all over the country. Stengel made me. 1953, he said I was the best defensive right fielder he ever saw. I had had a series against the Yankees of making catches that I will never forget. And he said that, and I was basically a center fielder, but Dominic was still playing, DiMaggio. And, you know, Boston's a big outfield. And I had something like 303 putouts in right field that year. And that's a lot of putouts for a right fielder. You know, the average is about 180, 185.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old friend, one of the voices of the White Sox, Jimmy Pearsall, former great center fielder. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. I'd like to remind everybody listening that this week, on Thursday night, at our new Skokie office, at Skokie Boulevard at Church, that Kenny Holtzman of the Cubs, who had quite a hectic career with the New York Yankees, and he's now with the Cubs, is going to be our guest there, and you can get his autographed picture and talk to him from 6:30 until 8 o'clock. That's this coming Thursday night on Skokie Boulevard at Church Road. And Kenny Holtzman will be there, and you can get his autographed picture, and you can talk to him.
Bob, let me ask you a question. Is this George? WAIT?
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, it's the only station I listen to because the music is super.
Yes,
they really have super music, and their news is good. I enjoy them very much. I don't know much about the stations here, except I'm an FM guy, but this station you got right here is excellent.
Yeah. It is a fine station. Let me ask you now about the business of broadcasting. Are you you act like you're enjoying yourself.
Well, I'm doing what I want. And, you know, when anybody has a job that they're doing what they like to do and what they... It wasn't too easy for me, believe me. I'm working with a guy who's a pro, and let me tell you, he works hard, and you have got to be ready to go to battle. You know, when, every day I walk in that booth with him, he's alive, and he's full of energy, and he'd much rather do simulcast of the radio and TV by himself because he's been so used to doing it all his life. And for him to get used to working with another guy day in and day out took a lot of patience on his part to put up with me because I really didn't know this business that well. And I had to learn when to speak, how quick I should talk, when to go in, when not to go in, not to walk on his lines, learn when he lets me have the time to get the best out of it, not just to talk the talk. Also, you know, he reads a lot of names. And I find out now when he reads the name and he throws it in the basket, that's when I talk. Because he's got to read the next one. He can't read those names unless he reads them first. Because there may be something there he shouldn't read, number one. And number two, the name is tough. He never gets Jones or Martin. It's always a real tough names to pronounce. And he leads the name in league in mispronouncing names. And I love him. You know, I love Harry Carey. I really do. And it's wow. And you were asking about the game, about my job. You know, I am coaching, too, and I like that very much. But the best thing about doing what I'm doing, I don't have to win. They have to win. You know, as a ball player, boy, the tension of winning creates a lot of migraine headaches. If you don't produce as a player, generally, you're gone. Nowadays, players get a lot more chance than we did. Well, you had to produce right away. I was hitting 285 for 10 years, and Ted Williams used to always say to me, "Hey, Bush, you're about a half an inch from Louisville." You know, today, I'd own the franchise. That's right. You know, you watch these guys getting away with hitting 265, and everybody loves them. Boy, what a hitter. Look, he's power coming up here right now.
All of a sudden, you get a pinch hitter, 212.
That's right. They got a shortstop playing who's a pretty good shortstop for Seattle. He's been playing a while. His major league lifetime batting average is 204. I wouldn't even put that in the media guide. I'd lie.
How did you do with fellas like Reynolds and Rashi?
Well, Reynolds and Rashi, I faced the first series I was in the big leagues. And they were both good curveball pitchers, as you know. One from the side and one over the top, and one with good, hard fastballs. Harder than most of these pitchers throw today. I've seen a lot of garbage pitchers today, but these guys threw hard. And I didn't do well. And we're in the batting cage one day, and Williams is standing behind me. And he said, "I want to talk to you when you come out of the cage, Bush." And he used to talk through his mouth when he'd get excited. You know, "Now listen here, Bush. If you think you're going to play up here, you better stay in there or get a job." Well, that hurt me because, you know, I wanted to play there. I had always dreamed about playing with the Red Sox, not playing with Williams because he was so much older than me. So then I learned to put my head on my shoulder, my left shoulder, and get my body turned inside, my left shoulder inside. like Johnny Pesky. You remember Johnny was a great hitter, and he did that. Now, for the rest of my career, Williams was always afraid I was going to get hit in the top of the head because I never took my head out of there. And if you read Ted's book, he said if anybody ever gave advice to, he felt that I took it and took it too strongly. But it made me a better hitter. It made me learn to stay, because you got to stay in. Like I tell Washington, if you ever watch Washington hit, against left-handers, he has a tendency to jerk his head out of there and swing too hard. But you got to keep your head and just try to punch the ball up the middle with two strikes. And that's the way you got to hit a curveball.
Did you ever, in your lifetime, or in your long baseball career, or your career as a broadcaster, hear or listen to an authority like Williams on hitting? You know, I could listen to the guy all day long, and I'm not a ball player.
Well, the one thing that I enjoyed about Williams was his career in the Marine Corps, and also his fishing. You know, he would sit. We used to have trains in those days. Remember the trains? And we'd have our own car, and we'd sit in the club car. And Ted didn't drink, but he'd have a little wine. And I think sometimes when he just smelt it, got him going on these stories. And he was telling the stories about how he would land and get shot at and was shot down twice. But he'd go through the motions of him. He'd give you that whole shot job, you know. And if he's fishing, he'd go, and he'd get that fishing pole out there, and he'd, you know, but his noises and all the things that were with it, the background was super. As far as hitting goes, he'd never tell you to hit like him. He would talk about the fundamentals of hitting. Quick with your hands, hit the ball out in front, study your pitchers, move up on the sinker ball pitchers. You ever see our ball club? We face sinker ball pitcher after sinker ball pitcher, and we got guys back in the batter's box. If you move up in the batter's box, the sinker, you get it before it breaks. But that's too much smarts. They're going to do it their way. That's it, you know. So why even tell them?
That's what he said about Suter.
Yeah.
He said those hitters got to step up on him.
Suter,
before that ball dips.
But I don't think Ted ever saw a pitch like Suter had. Suter has got, when he's right, a pitch that just, you know, falls off the table better than a curveball. I wouldn't want to hit that for $1 million. That's really a tough pitch. But when he gets to hanging it up in the air, that's when they hit him. But Williams was very interesting about his hitting because he got you thinking all the time, talking hitting, talking about the opposing pitchers. What is their best pitch? What are they throwing a jam? What's that catcher calling a jam? You know, you work with the catcher. You think about what the catcher does. You know, I used to guess good with the Cleveland Ball Club because Jim Hegan was a pattern catcher and a great one. But against me, I knew what he was calling.
Did Yogi Berra talk to you when you came up to the plate?
I never understood him. He had a mixture of Italian and Polish together. He used to go like this. I stopped talking to him one year, you know, and he said, "Hey, Pirso, what did I do?" I said, "Yogi, you know, that garlic you could behind that plate kills me when you open your mouth. I don't want to smell it." You know, I always like to get Passarella and Yogi Berra. Passarella was the umpire. Two Italians on that plate, and that garlic would knock you out. I used to think they chewed it instead of tobacco.
They say he was the best bad ball hitter ever in the majors.
Yes, sir. One of the greatest, and he belongs in the Hall of Fame, and a great, great player. He made himself a good catcher and a great catcher. He was a mediocre catcher, Bob, as you remember. He tried a lot of positions, and he couldn't play any place, but Bill Dickey really turned him around, the great catcher for the Yankees. And also, he did hit the bad ball. I never knew where to play him. I never made a good catch on him because I just, you know, 2-0, I'd say, well, he's going to pull now. I'll move over a little bit, and Boyd hit it in left center. Two strikes on him. He'd hit the ball on the left field line. He was just a good hitter, and in the clutch, I hated to see him come up.
Our guest today, and as you can tell, I'm enjoying it, is Jimmy Pearsall, great, great center fielder. I saw him play during his whole career, saw him make some of the greatest catches I've ever seen. He's now one of the voices of the White Sox, and he's doing an excellent job. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Fans, remember to be at our Skokie office, Skokie Boulevard at Church Road, Thursday night. Kenny Holtzman will be there from 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock, and he's an awfully nice guy. I've been hoping he'd do real well. You can get his picture and you can get his autograph. That's Thursday night, 6 to 8, Skokie Boulevard at Church Road. Don't miss it. Today, our guest is Jimmy Pearsall. I've always gotten a kick out of Pearsall. I used to get a kick out of watching him play, watching him run the bases, and I enjoy his broadcasting because I know the adjustment from a ball player to the radio booth is not an easy thing. Many have tried it, and very few have been successful. But Jimmy's doing a fine job, and I'm proud of you.
Thank you very much, Bob, and I want to congratulate you on being elected to the Hall of Fame. You know, I feel many ball players who are in there, in the Hall of Fame, I helped put there because I chased long drives on Mantle. I struck out a lot of times against Ford. When these guys get elected, it was a thrill for me. But I think knowing you as long as I've known you, I think this means an awful lot to you, and I think that you're well-deserved, and I'm sorry I can't be there because I'm going to be down the beach. But you know how I am. There's certain things, but I will tell you this. I love you, and I'm very, very happy for you.
Thank you, Jimmy. Thanks so much for making the effort to be with us today. It's been great, and you're doing a great job, and keep right doing the same thing you're doing.
Let's do it again.
Yeah. Our guest today, former great ball player, now one of the voices of the White Sox, and a wonderful guy with it, and a very, very good friend for all of these years, and we've enjoyed it. And I know you've enjoyed listening to Jimmy Bearsall. Have a nice day, and we'll see you again next Saturday at the usual time, the new time, remember, 5:30 to 6. Bye, everybody.